name's Bernadette Russell.
And my name is Gareth Briley.
And we are White Rabbit, and today we present to you with a podcast called Wonder, a series of beautiful short stories read by writers local to Revelation, Ashford, a fantastic venue inside an 11th century church in Ashford, Kent.
And this is our second podcast, and each one we're doing for the next 4 months or so is featuring two writers, and we've got two brilliant writers today. And without further ado, let's begin.
That's right. So I hope you're sitting up or laying down, whatever you fancy.
Whatever you fancy.
Cup of tea or something stronger. And if you're sitting comfortably, we'll begin. Called Roger, and it's by Malcolm Dixon. The cyclone had set the house down in a country of marvellous beauty. L. Frank Baum, from The Wonderful Wizard of Oz. I was 15, virtually. I had no right to be there. And I'd got plans, kind of, not that it mattered to anyone. Believe me, I could think of a million places I'd rather be on a Sunday afternoon than looking at Grandma's bagged leg stretched out in front of her like a baked leg of pork. My Uncle Jethro, he was poring over it with such interest, like he was going to carve. He was virtually drooling, but we all had to be there. My mum had said for the 10th time, all us drooling Collinses, even little Amber. So that when my Uncle Roger turned up finally and saw us all there, he would know that we all knew, whatever it was he did, whenever he went missing for days on end. That was the point of the intervention, the reason we were all here. I still didn't like it. My mum came through the swing door from the kitchen, carrying a tray of glasses in this huge jug of lemonade. I couldn't believe she was wearing an apron, like she owned the place. "Cool drink, everyone. Annabelle, honey, take this, can you?" "Whatever," I said, getting up. She gave me a look. "What now?" I said. "I'm doing it." I took the tray from her and put it on the table. All the ice was sloshing around. It must have weighed about 200 pounds. "Set the jug on a mat, honey, will you? Try not to spill it everywhere and make sure everyone gets a glass." "Yes, oh mighty one," I intoned, but started to pour all the same. "The interesting thing is," Uncle Jethro was saying, "for me anyway, is the brain tumour. I mean, if I understand right, all this business stopped after the operation. For over a year or more. Now, I've read articles and God knows what that damn thing was pressing on there inside of his head, you know, while it was growing. Brain trauma like that can really affect your behaviour in all sorts of weird ways. Honestly, it really can." "Then it started again," Grandma said, "long after the operation."
I don't know," he said. "Maybe the damage was already done. Who can say for sure, honestly?"
He looked genuinely confused. "Lemonade?" I said. "Just set it down for me, Annabelle, honey, will you?" Grandma said, without even looking up to see my best fake smile. "I used to think," she lowered her voice with a glance over at my Aunt Dory's bedroom door, "I used to think maybe what it was is, you know, that he had a second family someplace all tucked away. That's what I thought it was. You read about things like that in the newspapers every now and then. Just down there's fine, Belle, sweetie. That's why he won't talk about what he does when he goes missing." My mum reappeared through the swing door. She was taking off the apron. She was actually ripping it off, in fact. "Really? So why didn't his so-called other family come and visit him in the hospital ever? Not once, all those months. And then he didn't see them at all for a year? Don't make me laugh." My mum shook her head in irritation. "I'm sorry, Mother, but this whole concoction of yours doesn't wash." "That's what I thought about it anyway. You do read these things. Some men can keep it going for years and years, a double life like that, and nobody suspects a thing. Until one day something goes wrong and then it all comes out." Mum was staring at them both in disbelief, a look I knew only too well. Do either of you really have any idea of what's been going on? She said, shaking her head. All these years, the strain she's been under. Do you know about the time she's come to my house in tears at all hours and I've driven her all over town to look for him? And once, luck would have it, we actually found him going the other way at the traffic light. You know what, he saw us and drove off. He actually saw us, the bastard. I was motionless, frozen. I'd never heard my mum so much as say dang before, even with good reason. Right then the bedroom door opened and after a second or two, there was my Aunt Dory, struggling with her robe in the doorway. I'm sorry, everyone, she said. I can't sleep at all. I really don't want to take anything, but a glass of that lemonade would be good, Belle. I was still holding the damn jug like a fool. OK, coming up, I said, somewhat over-enthusiastically. She sat herself down over by Grandma, either gently or tiredly, it seemed. Her hair looked all tousled and everything. Is it really after four? Amber should be awake now, I think. Well, would you go and see to her, honey? I nodded, handing her the glass of lemonade. Jethro, she said, the reason all this stopped for a year after the operation, I figured it out eventually, was because Roger couldn't drive. He didn't have his licence. Whatever it is he does, he needs the car for it. I think we all have a good idea, really, what it is that he does, said my aunt. Even if we're not saying. There was an awkward silence. Then Aunt Dory said, Belle, would you? I'm a little worried about her sleeping so late, sweetheart, all this excitement and everything. I'm going, I said. I'd heard more than enough. I put the jug down on the table and headed in the direction of Amber's room. Trust me, I wanted to be any place else than where I was right then. I went out into the corridor. I heard Aunt Dory say with her voice breaking, I told myself it would all stop, you know, after Amber was born. I did, honestly. I really, really did. I turned the handle on Amber's door, stepped inside and quickly pushed the door to behind me. The room was in virtual darkness. I went over to this shade and hoisted it high. Golden light flooded the room. Amber sat bolt upright in her bed, wide-eyed, blinking. Hi, Amb, I said, looking about. Geez, I see you've got yourself a regular Barbie palace going on here. Everything was pink, even the dresser and stuff. Ow, she said, coming round. What'd you say? All these Barbies you got. The kid had about a dozen or more Barbies sitting on a bookshelf. Some regular ones, but others were like characters. Snow White was there, and the Little Mermaid, Tinkerbell, and, I kid you not, most awesomely, Dorothy from The Wizard of Oz. God, I love that movie like no other. I've seen it so many times I've lost count. I really used to think I was Dorothy at one point. Amber, I think we've died and gone to Barbie heaven, I said, offering her the fleshy bit of my forearm. Pinch me, kid. She swung her legs out of the bed. You want to play now? She said. I already had a good hold of Dorothy. She had those long bunches in her hair and was wearing her blue and white check dress. She even had a tiny pair of ruby slippers on her feet. Wow, Anne, but what a great Barbie, I said. If you want, we could play the Wizard of Oz. Oh, and this guy, I added, picking up a big-faced stuffed lion from her bed. He could be the Cowardly Lion, yeah?
Yeah,
Amber said. She was so cute, I'd forgotten. I was thinking just then she didn't have it so bad, really. I mean, is it worse to have a daddy who disappears for a few days here and there, or one who'd completely moved out to the West Coast and really does have a whole new cute family you couldn't begin to compete with? All that weird talk in there. But who was actually the worse off? Hey, look, this is Dorothy caught in the twister, I said, spinning Barbie round and up into the air before bringing her down to land in the sunshine over by the window.
Toto,
I said in a squeaky, alarmed voice.
I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore.
Amber giggled. She was clutching the lion, such a look of open-eyed wonder on her little face. Then we heard just a snatch of raised voices from the living room. Instantly, her expression changed, and chewing on her bottom lip, she looked anxiously out of the window. I looked with her, all along, both ways. Nothing. There was just the empty street. And that's the end, and that was Roger by Malcolm Dixon. Fantastic story. Thank you very much for that, Malcolm.
This next story is by Bella Basura, and it's called Granny Takes a Trip. 1. Grandmother Punk's cats are ensconced in the shady parts of the veranda. They are called Titus and Fuchsia. Needless to say, she named them during a period of intense and private gumengast. The cats are sleek, smoky grey and quick silver sheen, almost invisible shadows. They lap up the shade of the veranda, where Grandmother Bella the Punk sits and writes. She is sprawled, as if on the forest floor, as if she was the first great ape to climb down from the tree canopy, pick up a biro, and begin to write. 2. A short way off, a snoop of local gibbons are howling naked around the fire pit. They scratch, pick fleas off each other, and ape about. Some of them are yodeling redemption songs a cappella. And Bella just knows by nightfall the garden will be infested with hairy face acoustic folk bonobos. 3. An extended poke of juvenile capuchins, the family of a neighbour, sprawl on a pub garden table, brawling and masturbating over video torrents of middle-aged men in expensive suits having cardiac arrests in corporate high-end gastropubs. 4. It's barely lunchtime, she thinks, turning another page of her paper notebook, and the world is already awash with strangeness. Her eyes flicker, she adjusts her spectacles, and decides it was just the hashed truffle she ate for breakfast. Sometimes, writing like this seems to come naturally to Granny the Punk. Sometimes it's as if she were just reading the words from the back of a crumpled bus ticket found in a charity shop coat pocket. 5. And she's off, writing again. In the summer heat, the crowd spilled out through the double swing doors and spread across the tiny square. I elbowed and struggled my way down to the deep, shady recesses of the cellar bar. Dolly and the Marquesa were snuggled in the cool shadows, chatting and giggling, hugging each other and weeping with merriment. I was already turning on my heels. Bella! Bella! Dolly called after me. The deal has worked out. I'm going to be working with the Marquesa, like we're sisters. I was feeling a bit sick, so I barged my way back out into the blinding sunlight. Dolly was still with me. Here's a story I'm going to tell. I want you to be the first to read it. Even the Marquesa hasn't seen it yet. I'm not showing it to her until the script meeting next week. Will you come with me? But I wasn't listening. I needed to be on my own. I wandered aimlessly until after midnight, with a ripped carrier bag of dirty linen, seeking anonymity in laundrettes, not wishing to go home, reading her damn story in the half-light. 6. Momentarily, Granny Bella's attention is snagged by an overweight orangutan hunched over a pregnant chimpanzee beneath the shade of a silver birch tree. Their gibbery giggling while making smiley winkles at each other's Facebook feeds. No, Bella thinks. That's too weird. 7. Granny again begins reading back what she's written and then seems deflated. More first-person generic drug trippery shite, she thinks. But let's try this out. Rising awkwardly and upstanding, arms outstretched in a vast, magnanimous gesture, she starts to recite out loud. Suddenly, she is declaiming with serious theatrical intent from her little A5 notebook, and the other monkeys seem a bit discombobulated. 8. See, I ran the path of Hecate from a while back then. Granny is reliving her misspent youth. Blacked out in alleyways, vomit smeared in my hair. The lights that torment me through closed eyes, my DM boots damp with my own urine. Her eyes swivel in their sockets. 9. Then suddenly she's back in the script meeting. I slipped into the vacant seat beside Dolly. They'd already begun to discuss different levels of reality and authorial identification in specific literary texts. No, 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 you're wrong, screamed the Marquesa. If you tell the story as you've written it, then people will know you're not my sister. I thought it was obvious. I wrote the piece in the first person using the fictitious voice of a narrator, replied Dolly. I think it's quite clever, I chipped in. Clever! Dolly relished the word. The Marquesa glared at me. If you can't say anything useful, then blah, blah, fuck, blah, off. Okay? She snapped. I'm quite clear, Dolly was continuing. You said to write a story about a sister. And you said, and I said, I didn't have a sister. Exactly, I said. And I said, and you said, it doesn't have to be true. And that's exactly what she did, I chirped in again. In the throes of exasperation, the Marquesa is finding her feet. When I said, write a story about your sister that isn't true, I meant something like, I don't know, I remember when da-di-da-di-da-di-da, blah-di-blah, and she slipped out of her slinky, slinky knickers. You know the kind of thing. Blah-blah, yada-yada, blah-blah, fucking yada-yada, fucking fishnet stockings or something. Honey, please. It was rapidly turning into some sort of bloodbath. Dolly, triumphant, elucidates. I didn't realise that when you said I, you really meant actually I, and not I that is a universal or not I of fiction. So I just don't grok your definition of fiction. To me, fiction happens in the gap between realities, in the free fall of imagination, in the fruits of the frutescent void. I stood up and I staggered into the street. 10. Somewhere, a gorilla was battering an Alexa with a chromium egg beater shouting, "You're weird! You're weird! Just say it! Say it!" I sat with my head in my hands, watching plotlines spiral off to a myriad of oxymoronic conclusions. The sun set weak and yellow in the west. Rain clouds burst their deluge and dying rays. A voice behind me. Still looking for rainbows? The big man asked. I said, sundown crackles with electric storm light, washing my skin with pulsating gold orange. I am smearing out into the solar sky. 11. A big, uniformed alpha male baboon with a gas mask bag filled with forms, documents, and unenforceable regulations spies Granny through the other monkey commotions and struts purposely over.
My directed breath surges through the air, weaves waves of surf, a planet-sized dust motes to ride upon. Fluff ride, oh my holy cunt!
Granny is still aspirating from the patio. Now, towering over her, the alpha baboon pulls a crumpled top-secret dossier from his rugged sack. Clearing his throat with authority, he enunciates,
"Have you been tripping again, Bella?"
"Probably," Grandmother Punk says, staring at her hands.
"Well, go and do it inside. What would the neighbours think?"
So, she picks up a notebook and pen and goes inside, closing the door behind her. Leaving Titus and Fuchsia out in the garden, playing with the monkeys till tea time. There you go. Granny Takes a Trip by Bella Basura. Thank you very much, Bella.
That was fantastic. Thank you so much, everybody, for listening.
Thanks to all our writers from last episode, this episode, and the ones in the future.
So we'll be back on June the 1st, 2020, with another couple of stories around the theme of wonder. Thank you. Sweet dreams.
Bye.